On today's Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, we're going to talk Olympics, white supremacy, creepy doctors, boycotting L'Oreal, and a creeping Sharia to top all creeping Sharias. Stay tuned.
GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com is hosted on Squarespace, and we're super excited about it. Squarespace makes it easy to receive money to keep our independent podcasts going. Its powerful e-commerce functionality lets you sell anything online and customize it, like our soon-to-be Creeping Sharia t-shirts. We should have that, Zara. We should definitely have that.
It's also free and secure hosting, which is really important right now. There's nothing to patch or upgrade ever. And this is my favorite part. They have 24/7 award-winning customer support, which is awesome if you are a procrastinator and frequently need help at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning.
Check out squarespace.com for a free trial now. And when you're ready, just use the code GOOD. That's G-O-O-D. And you'll get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
No more cup.
Welcome to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim episode number 38.
Our February episode.
Valentine's Day episode.
Sort of.
You're going to be hearing this after Valentine's Day. But, you know, I'm still saying that it's Valentine's Day so that all of you can still buy my Muslim Valentine's Day cards at my Etsy shop.
Which you should. I also just think it's funny that, like, in Taz world, it's like perpetually Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. These cards are all the time good. Thank you for everyone who has been buying the cards. Our listeners have been going, and I really appreciate it. It's been really sweet. How are you doing, Zara? How was your Valentine's Day?
Oh, my God. I'm exhausted. I bought a puppy. I mean, I didn't buy a puppy. I rescued a puppy.
Oh, rescue.
Yeah, he's a rescue.
He looks like a teddy bear and a kitten. I don't know how else to explain it.
That's pretty accurate, actually. He's like, if a teddy bear and a kitten had a puppy, he would look like my Wookiee.
Yeah, he's like kind of floppy like a teddy bear and then is really passive like how I imagine kittens to be. It's just, and it doesn't bark.
He's the perfect dog.
How is it going being a doggy mommy?
I just want to apologize to all moms in the world ever.
Why?
Everyone who's ever been a mother to anyone or anything, I'm so sorry. You should be a CEO of everything in the world all the time.
That's hilarious.
I've been a puppy mama for 1 week. I'm exhausted. I don't know how people do it. Also, I already have an Instagram account for him.
Oh my god.
Wookie
gosh,
and Teddy.
One of those.
Find me on IG. I'm totally that mom. Yeah. But how are you, Taz?
I'm good. It's been a very, very busy month of being in the public. I'm in a book called Modern Loss. I have a story in there about my grandfather and about going to Nepal. And so I had a book reading for that. You can check that book out. I'll be on the Terrible Thanks for Asking podcast coming up to talk about that story. I was on the They Call Us Bruce podcast with Jeff Yang and Phil Yu. This is part of our Potluck podcast collective talking about all things Muslim V-Day cards. And I was also on NPR. So it's been like super media heavy.
Dang, you've been busy.
I'm tired. I want to like hibernate for a little bit.
Also, I need to point out, though, there is a quote on the cover of your Modern Loss book that is by a very important person.
Oh my God, Mindy Kaling?
Yes!
Oh my gosh. Do you think she read the book or do you think she just like wrote the quote?
I think she flipped only to your story and she was like, I'm only going to read this one. And she read it and then she wrote that quote.
Oh, thanks, Mindy.
She's the best. Mindy, follow my puppy at Wookie and Teddy on Instagram.
We have some big things to talk about today. We have some big things, some funny things, some important things. But for our hot topics, we got to start with the shooter. Today is Friday the 16th. On Valentine's Day, there was a shooting in Parkland, Florida at a school. And 17 people have died. And all the stories are coming out. And it's so tragic.
I just want to frame this correctly. That like 17 people have died at the hands of a white supremacist shooter known to the FBI carrying a legal AK.
At the age of 19.
At the age of 19, this is the country that we live in right now. That should be the leading sentence for every headline, not, you know, everything else we've been hearing of like, I'm going to already get so angry. We're going to talk about more of this in our fatwas and in the rest of the podcast. So I don't want to touch on too much of it now, except to highlight that happened.
Well, what I want to talk about this is that one of the things that I've been seeing happening is that we know this guy is a white supremacist. We know that he went to this camp. We know that this guy wasn't Muslim. Otherwise, it would have been framed in the media completely differently. And the day after the shooting happened, a lot of my Muslim peers were saying things like, oh, if this guy was Muslim, it would have been framed differently, which is technically fact. Muslims are portrayed, like, as soon as you find out it's a brown or Muslim person, the media will attack shootings in a completely different way. But it feels so disrespectful in other ways to have to make it all about being Muslim when anytime there's a shooting that happens. And I think it's very like, it centers the Muslim experience, but it centers it in this way, which just feels really gross to me, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we shouldn't be walking through the world centering Muslimness so hard. But at the same time, the thing that we're doing when we say things like that, when we're saying this is how it would be framed if a Muslim had done it, what we're actually trying to say is that this was a white supremacist system that we're living in. These are our biases that we are seeing the world through. And we're just trying to highlight that type of a microaggression for people to see. So I don't know. It's just, for me, it's been kind of like, I can see both sides of it. And I think that we need to be careful in how we portray it. And I just want to throw that kind of caution out there.
Yeah, I think you put that beautifully. I have nothing to add to that. Absolutely. Well said.
There was a school shooting that also happened in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles.
Oh my God.
It was a shooting that happened. It was a 12-year-old. It was a junior high school. And she had brought a gun in her backpack. And it went off accidentally is what been going on in the news. Though I have some suspicion because the kid that was shot was an Iraqi refugee kid.
Oh no.
And he's also 12 years old and he's in the hospital and he has a bullet lodged in his brain right now. So they're collecting money. So for folks that are interested in donating, please check that out. There's a GoFundMe page somewhere.
Oh my God.
And you know, this is just
12.
The existence we have to live in, right? Like that when we send our kids to school, they might get shot.
God, Kamau Bell posted today on his Twitter account that his daughter, who's in first grade, was having to do drills in case of gun violence. And it just broke my heart. And it made me so sick. My parents and I, my folks and I, we went back to Iran. At one point, I was born here. And then we went back. And I'm just hearing the tenor of fear in my voice as I confirm that I was born here. And while we were in Iran, as my parents were sort of debating whether or not to stay there or come back here, you know, one of the things that my mom didn't want for me was that I knew air raid drills at 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whenever I would hear sirens, I would jump to the ground. And when we came here and there were fire truck sirens, I went flat to the ground and stayed silent at 2 years old. And, you know, it devastated my parents. And that's part of why, you know, you leave a place where your entire family is for the sake of your children, to know that children everywhere, everywhere, everywhere right now are having to do these drills to be safe, that there's this massive number of school shootings going on that it makes it that you have like a 3 in 5 chance.
It's just really tragic to, I'm oddly really grateful I don't have kids so that I don't have to send them to school and have to have this fear, because I can't imagine what people with kids are feeling right now.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Speaking of kids and parents, I guess, let's switch to talking about the Olympics, which are happening right now. And every time I see Chloe Kim in a commercial with Chloe Kim and her dad, I just like start crying immediately because it's so sweet and tender.
I just teared up as you said Chloe Kim and her dad.
Right? Like there's this beautiful, I don't even know what the commercial's for, but it's like a commercial of her dad taking her to the half pipe every weekend. And it's like, it's so tender and so beautiful. And he's so proud of his daughter. And he's like, I'm a proud immigrant American. And oh, it just makes me like tear up. All these Olympic stuff are just making me cry out of tenderness.
I'm just laughing because it's like the way that it also is like working in my brain, because there are so many ads that are using this, like using the Olympics in a multitude of ways, right? But all of them have merged for me to that image of Chloe Kim's dad.
Yeah.
You know, taking her. And so, like, for me, all I'm walking away with for all the advertisers out there is like fathers and daughters should snowboard together. Fathers and daughters should snowboard together.
Have you been watching the Olympics, Sarah?
I've only seen clips because I have a puppy that's peeing on my carpet.
Right, right.
And I'm distracted.
Don't the puppies have Olympics? Isn't there like a puppy Olympic out there somewhere?
I don't know. Is there like a Yahoo group or something for moms? I need to join.
You're not a real mom. You need puppy mom.
Oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed. Do moms ever have time to watch the Olympics?
They do. They do. They will take their kids to the snowboard half pipe.
Oh God, I'm crying again.
I haven't been watching the Olympics. My sisters have been watching it, but I haven't been watching it. But it's been really cool to see all the Asian American faces that are being represented by America's Olympics.
Yeah, I've been following Phil Yu's blog.
Angry Asian Man.
And replying with so many like cry face and cheering emojis. So an interesting thing happened with the Olympics.
Yeah.
There was this great celebration of Mariah Nagasu's historic Olympic performance.
On skates, right? Ice skating.
Yeah, ice skating. And Barry Weiss, an op-ed writer for the New York Times, decided that she was going to write about how great it is for immigrants.
Oh, but she's not an immigrant. She's an Asian American that was born here.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And folks tried to explain it to her.
And she dug herself into a deeper hole.
She dug herself into such a deep hole that Chrissy Teigen had to rescue her. I mean, she didn't rescue her. She tried also to reach out to her. And I feel like if ever Chrissy Teigen reaches out to you, just shut up.
Yeah, just do whatever Chrissy Teigen tells you to do.
Period.
Chrissy Teigen is also a Asian American woman who is so hot and like everyone's in love with her. And I tweeted that she's the secret weapon for Asian American feminism, which she is.
Yes. I love that tweet. I retweeted it and I favorited it. Also, Chrissy Teigen, since you're a mom of three, can you also tell me like what mom board you use when you're struggling?
It's mom board different than a puppy board. Much different. Much, much different.
Really? Because I feel like as a person who like now wears glasses at nighttime for distance and who has a puppy for a week, I feel like I'm on the inside of so many communities.
There's one bad thing that happened at the Olympics, though. This is our Muslim angle for the Olympics. There was a request for a prayer room by the Olympians. I think it was either by the Olympians or the attendees. But there was a request for a prayer room. And because of all the protests, the Korean government decided not to provide prayer rooms for Muslims.
Oh, and tell us why they decided not to, Taz.
Because of the protests.
There was such a protest and an outcry. And not even, I don't think it was a physical protest, right? It was like all online harassment. All they said was that the opposition to the prayer room was so strong that local officials could, quote unquote, no longer do their jobs.
That's bullshit. Islamophobia is creeping around the world. You gotta do something about it.
That's so scary. It's the Olympics. Do you know how many Muslims are attending? I mean, my God.
Well, to be fair, this is the Winter Olympics, and I would imagine that there aren't that many Muslim nation states that are in the cold countries. But that being said, I still think it matters.
No. Skiing is huge in Iran. Also, I went skiing in Dubai and cracked my sacrum.
Skiing in Dubai doesn't count.
No. Doesn't count. All right. I'm going to stand up right now, like Cool Runnings, and be like, I don't think so.
Another place where we are seeing internet crap about Muslims is, so today is February the 16th, and there was an indictment that was released by the Department of Justice. Robert Mueller put this out, and the indictment was against 13 Russian nationals. So basically, I'm so livid about this. So basically, what the indictment is saying, there's a lot of things it's saying, but one of the things that it's saying on page 14 of the indictment, because I was scrolling through and reading it, and people have been talking about this, is that there's an organization called United Muslims of America, and they were putting out stuff that was like, Hillary Clinton's going to have a Sharia rally, or don't vote for Hillary because of Muslim reasons. The point is that I remember seeing this. I remember seeing these messages getting distributed out of the United Muslims of America Facebook page. And I remember doing research on it and trying to figure out, like, who is this organization? Because I've never heard it before. They came out of nowhere. And they're kind of spreading hateful messages. And all this time, it was Russians that were doing it. And I was right. I was right about it being Russians. I was right about it not being real people that were distributing it. And it's made, I'm so livid by it.
I read the document and it's horrifying.
It's so horrifying because the whole document isn't just about how the Russians were using Muslims. It was the Russians were using basically
millions of dollars of social media strategies.
Yeah, they were using millions of dollars of social media strategy. They had like fake Black Lives Matter accounts. They had fake alt-right accounts.
They also had fake protests. They held fake staged protests.
And they, because they didn't have anyone on the ground, they would like pretend they would have some sort of reason why they couldn't be on the ground. They would find some local activists to host the protest for them. It's just so scary because this is the world that I have a career in. With 18 Million Rising, we are a digital media organization and we're trying to organize people on the internet. And this Russian hacking and Russian infiltrators into American social media is in direct conflict with the kind of work that we're trying to do. And it further makes our work harder when we're trying to organize online communities because now there's going to be even more distrust and discord.
Oh, absolutely. That's already happening, right?
It's totally happening. I mean, one of the things that we're noticing is that for the people that we're working with, Asian Americans, there's a lot more people that are getting off of Facebook and off of the internet because people don't know who to trust anymore.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, when I'm scared, you know, and I post about how scared I am, you post messages about organizing and other friends of mine say, you know, this is the time to organize. I don't actually know how to even go about doing that because I don't know what methods to use. I don't know what locations are even going to be safe anymore. Like, it also really bothers me because, I mean, this is just such a slap in the face that, like, the Russians know to protest as a way of swaying an election.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, people.
I think the thing that I was really interested in when I was reading this was that the wording that they're using is they're trying to sow discord. And I thought that was like, so they're not really trying to have people vote one way or another, at least in this indictment. What they're trying to do is they're trying to make people hate each other so much that they're trying to force the people on the left to be further left and the people on the right to be further right. And they're just trying to cause fighting to happen.
And that's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening in a country before. Where have I? There's this way to sow discord. It sounds so much like destabilize. You destabilize a country. Does that sound familiar to you, Taz?
That's what's happening. And I'm just so mad at people for falling for it. Because, I've always been about electoral organizing and getting people out to vote. And I have a 20-year career in doing this. And when I see people on social media and people who are Muslim and people who are people of color who are saying, like, we shouldn't vote because we're buying into this system or everyone in the electoral politics is evil, it upset me so much because we do so much work to get to this point. And now we know that, like, most of those messages, at least many of those messages, were seeded by Russians to feed into these mentalities. And I just wish people weren't so gullible.
Yeah, I wish you could see my face right now because, well, right now, people don't know we're apart recording. I'm recording from San Francisco. Thank you to the San Francisco Writers Grotto for the space. And you're in L.A.
Yep.
And I am just holding my flat Iranian I told you so face.
Oh, yeah.
Along with you because
I have so much I told you so face on my face right now.
Oh, my God. Our I told you so face game right now.
My I told you so face is like not just I told you so, but it was also like I did research. I remember seeing this message and I tried to Google who the source was and tried to figure out who these people were. Like I knew exactly. I remember exactly when all this happened. I'm so I told you so.
But see, I knew it was Russians though, man. I knew. Like, I feel like every Iranian knows because we had it happen to us.
I didn't know it was Russians. I didn't know, realize it was fake. I was just like, I don't understand why people are trusting this organization where they don't know who the person is.
I feel comfortable and I want to hear, like, Iranians that are listening to this podcast, the like six of you, write in and tell me, am I so on point right now? I feel comfortable speaking on behalf of all Iranians saying we all knew it was Russia. Like, as soon as it happened, I feel like every Iranian was like, oh, shit. Oh, United States has Russia here now. Oh, you guys will get to feel what that's like.
We'll see.
Okay.
We see. All right, we're going to take a quick break now from our sponsors. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is brought to you by HelloFresh.
HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers your favorite step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy.
We got to try out HelloFresh, and it saved me so much time from not having to go grocery shopping.
Yeah, I was kind of intimidated at the thought of following a new recipe. But they have pictures.
And it's so easy to use. They have these step-by-step instruction cards, one card per recipe, and they make it really easy.
Nailed it in 30 minutes. I burned the cashews, but I nailed it. The cashew orange chicken was really good, even though I burned the cashews.
I didn't use the cashews in mine, so I didn't burn it, so it worked out.
See, that's what I like about it. It's convenient, and you can, like, work around the ingredients that you want. Nice.
Yeah, and I don't have to leave the house ever, which is really great for the introvert in me. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter our special code, GOOD30. That's G-O-O-D and the number 30.
No more cup.
Welcome back to the show. We are on to our Creeping Sharia segment. Zara, I know we've been talking about this whole episode, but I think we know what your creeping Sharia is.
I have a Muslim puppy.
What makes your puppy Muslim?
He doesn't eat bacon.
Is he circumcised?
Whoa, he's neutered.
Well, kind of Muslim-ish.
Close enough. He's Muslim-ish. He would listen to the podcast. I mean,
yeah,
in fact,
totally.
He does listen to the podcast because I take him on walks listening to the podcast.
With his doggy headphones.
Also, we have to go on walks 5 times a day, which is like, that's very Muslim. You know what I mean?
5 times a day?
Yeah. He's a puppy.
Oh my gosh. And what are you feeding your dog?
I am feeding him halal doggy food.
I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing.
What is it exactly?
Well, I make sure to get zabiha meat.
Shut up.
Yeah, I'm lying. I don't do that. But I make an effort not to get any dog food that has bacon in it. We did get something that was bacon flavored.
Yeah.
Which is like, because it has chemicals in it. It's not real bacon. Like bacon bits. You remember bacon bits?
No, because I didn't eat bacon bits growing up.
Bacon bits are the only halal bacon.
No, they're not technically halal. They're just not made from bacon.
No, it's fake bacon. It's just made out of like chemicals. Oh my God, you don't understand. Do you know how excited everyone in my mosque was growing up? Like the woman who ran our classroom at the mosque ran in with bacon bits and was like, look, you can have this imported on our salads.
I think I was probably in more of a conservative Muslim space because I think even the name bacon was what was shirked a lot. It was like, oh, no. And if someone would have said, you know, it's not made from real pig, they would still be like, no, but it's called bacon and you can't have anything that's associated with bacon. I'm pretty sure that's something that probably happened growing up.
Oh, interesting. We had like a creeping Sharia relationship with it where we were like, ha ha, your bacon is less bacon.
So your dog's eating bacon?
No, he's eating bacon flavored items.
Fake bacon. Got it. Wait, what's the creepy Sharia of that?
Well, that I have a Muslim dog that's eating halal puppy food. I feel like on Instagram, like I'm taking up space as a Muslim puppy. That's a little bit of a creeping Sharia. Also, I like see myself having all these conversations in my head about like, well, does my dog have a Muslim identity? Do I supplant that onto him? Is that fair? Does he come to discover it himself?
Just
all these mama questions, Taz. All these mama questions. What's your creeping Sharia?
My creeping Sharia is that Valentine's Day is actually Muslim. You know how there's all those people out there that say Valentine's Day is so, like, haram.
What?
And that Muslims don't celebrate Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Not true. It's as Muslim as it gets.
What?
I know.
Okay, break it down.
I got sent this article because I've been doing the Muslim V-Day cards, so this is, like, my life for the past couple months. And this article says that during the Middle Ages, when Spain was ruled by Muslims, that was the time when, even though Europeans experienced love, it was very sterile, the kind of love that they experienced. So it wasn't showy.
Oh.
It was very like tempered and contained because the showiness was seen as lewd. But Muslims experienced love by expression of poetry because in Islam, the love that you show a husband or a wife is so similar to the kind of passion and love you're supposed to have for God.
Yeah, the beloved.
Yeah. So this whole idea of like love as a form of expression was very Muslimish. So during the medieval times in Spain, this expression of Muslim love of like people writing poems and people just being so very vocal about love, that creeped into European society. And that's kind of where love poetry comes from. It's kind of where Valentine's Day cards come from. It's anything about the showiness of love.
Oh my God.
Is Muslim creeping.
You are blowing my mind right now.
I know. I've been like, my mind was completely blown when I started reading this article. I've shared it on my Twitter at Tazzy Star. You can see the article there. But it was super mind-blowing.
Do you know, like, oh my God, when I take this to my mom, she is never going to let my dad live it down.
Yeah. Now, all these people, anyone who's given out a Valentine's Day card, Muslim. Just saying. Muslim.
When we say be mine, we really mean you are Muslim.
Yeah. You are Muslim.
That's amazing.
I know. It was like super mind-blowing.
I kind of want to give you, like, skip ahead and just give you a good Muslim award for this discovery, but I want to hear about your fatwa first.
My fatwa is about how Amina Khan, she was the face of L'Oreal. She's this beautiful hijabi woman, a fashionista, and she was one of their icons, but it was a short-lived icon. She was forced to step down because L'Oreal dug into, like, 2014 Twitter and saw that Amina had some pro-Palestinian tweets. I mean, who doesn't? Am I right?
Yeah.
And the people saw that, and they're like, oh, you can't be part of L'Oreal anymore. I know. And so, like, I actually was pretty side-eyeing this from the get-go because I've been boycotting L'Oreal since the BDS campaign for Palestine. So I haven't been using L'Oreal products for about 10 years now. So when I heard that L'Oreal was having Amina Khan jump on as a face, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, they're probably just, like, Muslim washing this because of diversity and tokenizing, and Muslim hijabi women are on trend. Like, as soon as she got kicked off of the campaign, I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds about right, because that sounds like something L'Oreal would do.
Yeah, that's really souring my mouth to any L'Oreal product right now.
So my fatwa is a boycott of L'Oreal.
I'm with it.
My fatwa is basically a boycott.
Yeah.
This kind of inspired a conversation that I was thinking about all the things I'm boycotting. And I've been boycotting a lot of things because I think that's important. I don't know if people still boycott, but I've been boycotting Walmart, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Dasani water, Nestle water, L'Oreal products, SodaStream, Uber, Sabra hummus, Wonder Woman movie, Exxon, Gap, American Apparel, and AT&T.
Damn. I mean, yeah, I don't use any of those other sources either. Without thinking about it, I've actually been boycotting much of this list. Like, when you first read it off, I was like, holy crap, how do you shop at all? But then I realized, oh no, actually I have made my way around all of these products except L'Oreal, which now can't use their Color Guard shampoo anymore.
Bye-bye, L'Oreal. Also, all these companies that are just tokenizing the image of Muslim women need to understand that Muslim women have values. You can't just have us be faces without understanding that we actually have voices.
No, and also don't support genocide. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, come on. What's your fatwa?
My fatwa is I am so sick of hearing news organizations use the phrase the telltale comment on YouTube that could have stopped the shooting.
Yeah.
The telltale comment. Because then what it comes with is, unfortunately, the FBI can't act on suspicion.
Which is a lie.
Yeah, that's not true.
FBI always acts on suspicion. The thing about this shooter in Florida is that he was making terrible comments on YouTube. And I read an article that said that the guy whose page it was, the owner of the YouTube page, he actually called in the FBI and said, this guy is trying to plan a school shooting. And the FBI didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, you know what else told them? You know what else told them is that he was a part of white supremacy forums.
Right.
And that he had purchased AKs.
Yeah.
And that multiple people had reported him. Yeah.
And he went to a camp. He went to a white supremacist camp is what I also heard.
But that's just like normal white guy stuff that's just fine with the FBI. That's not suspicious.
Yeah. I guess the debate is also kind of like, is the FBI intentionally ignoring this to allow the white supremacy murders happen? Or is this the unintentional bias where the FBI is hyper-focused on brown crimes in a certain way versus white crimes? Before, I used to think it was the latter. Now I'm thinking it's the former.
Yeah, I don't know. I just got acid reflux talking about the FBI at all.
We need a fatwa that too.
Ugh. All right. Feeling awkward.
Feeling awkward.
Time for an awkward ask a Muslim.
Zara, tell me about your awkward ask a Muslim.
I had, speaking of informants and reporting, I had a really creepy doctor.
Yeah, your doctor sounds super creepy.
I went in to talk about my sinuses and somehow winded
up. Was he hot?
No.
Okay, just checking. Because my doctor's hot.
No, I mean, even if he was, now it's like destroyed.
Wait, he was?
No, I'm saying if he was, it erased all recollection of his looks.
What'd he do?
He kept asking me about my Iranian family.
And was he Iranian too?
No. And I mean, he was Middle Eastern and he was like offering up information about himself saying like, well, my family this and we do that and blah, blah, blah. And he came from a different Middle Eastern country that is not on the Muslim ban list. But then aside from that, he was like incessantly asking me questions about whether my parents did business in Iran or not and how often they go back or not. And I was like, what the fuck does this have to do?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe he's being an informant.
That's what it felt like because I didn't understand what that had to do with my postnasal drip and allergies.
Why would a doctor be asking such weird questions?
No, especially if I have made it very clear that I haven't been there since I was 14 years old for one visit, 1 month. And that I have been born and raised here and live here. And then, like, why is he asking me about my parents' business dealings? Like,
what?
It was so creepy and it was so scary.
It wasn't like uncleness, because I feel like Desi uncles are all about asking the inappropriately invasive, awkward questions. It wasn't like that.
I mean, it went a step beyond that just because, like, usually, you know, I get all that stuff in, like, Lyft rides, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, that stuff usually ends as soon as they hear, like, your American kid accent and, like, that you don't know all the stuff about your own homeland. Then they sort of, like, usually are a little bit offended. And it sort of ends there, you know? And they're just like, ah, you're just like my kids. And it's over. They don't keep probing. And also, it's a 15-minute doctor's appointment.
So how did you end it?
I just, like, smiled and said, no, you know, and no, and no, and have you had a chance to look into my sinuses? I don't think so, because you're asking me a lot of other questions. Like, I didn't even say that much. I didn't feel comfortable because I didn't know, you know, what is he taking away from this? Like, if I,
yeah,
unruly, is he going to be like, oh, she was uncomfortable by it, you know, or like, what? It was so scary. It was so scary.
So I say time for a new doctor.
Yeah. What's your awkward ask?
My awkward ask, Muslim, was I went to the Women's March. It was that Saturday morning. We actually recorded our last podcast the day before, so I couldn't tell the story. I didn't make new protest signs. I just used the ones I had before of Yuri Kochiyama in The Bandit Queen. And I went with a contingent of women. It was a small group of us. I had my friend who wears hijab with me. And then I had a Sikh woman with me as well. And she also covers her hair because many super religious folks from the Sikh community also cover their hair. Like there are some Christians and Jewish people that also cover their hair. And so basically in our group, there was like two brown women with covered hair from different religions. And while we were walking through the march, we had really well-meaning, nice, white, liberal folks that wanted to take our pictures in.
Oh,
like there's this fine line that we're doing when we perform Muslimness in public and when we perform Muslimness as activist women. And I think like when I'm present in spaces like a protest like this and I have Muslimish protest signs, I'm definitely saying, hey, we're here. We're not on the margins. We're actually participating in public discourse. But then it just feels so exotifying to have people say, hey, can you stop? I want to take a picture of you at this protest, because then you're just kind of like, oh, well, what are you taking a picture of? And I know that my friend who wears hijab, she was really uncomfortable every time people stopped her to try to take a picture. So she was trying to avoid eye contact with people and trying to like hide and like not when she saw people were paying extra attention to her, she was trying to hide. And I was like, I felt so bad for her because she was just trying to be at protest, you know, be in a march, and she didn't want to be there as a photo opportunity to be tokenized, you know?
Yeah, everybody's activist tourism candy.
Yeah. So I don't know. Gross. I've been reflecting on that. I would say if you are listening to this podcast, I mean, definitely ask for permission before you take photos. Like, I don't think that was really an issue, but maybe just kind of like high five instead of trying to like exotify. Oh, that should be on a shirt. High five instead of exotify.
You're going to get a lot of high fives, girl.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty good segue to our Good Muslim Award segment, because you have a pretty baller Good Muslim Award to give.
Yes. Speaking of dope hijabi women, mine's going to go to Hada Katebi, an Iranian-American fashion blogger. She's been all over the news this past month. She was on WGN for an interview. They were talking to her about being a fashion blogger, but then they were asking her in this interview all these really stupid questions about nuclear war and about how Iranian women wear short skirts. Though that is, I guess, somewhat related to her.
Oh my God, that was my favorite segue, was when he was like, let's talk about nuclear weapons.
Because we get this all the time as Zara and Taz, you know, like whenever we're out doing media, somehow they expect us to be experts on world politics.
All things foreign policy.
And all things foreign policy. And, you know, like, she was so baller in how she answered the questions. I was so proud of her.
There's also the part with the anchor lady who then made a very awful accusation.
What did she say?
She said, you don't sound very American.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
It was terrible and it was terrifying. It was, that's a horrifying thing to say to somebody on air who is speaking with dissent about policies in this country that, like, should have dissent spoken to them, especially on the news.
And then Hoda's response, I think it was to that one, was she said, well, that's because I read.
So awesome.
And I was like, oh, snap. Her, like, comebacks are so smart. When the anchor lady said that thing about you don't sound American, I thought she meant it like you're not speaking English in the way you're supposed to be speaking English. And then when I listened to the clip, I realized that she was talking about speaking out and protesting and resisting. And I was like, whoa, I cannot. Like, she held her ground. It was so amazing to see.
It was a great interview.
So good.
And that anchor lady, because so many people called in, reached out to Hoda Katebi and asked her for a follow-up interview.
Good.
The details we're still waiting for, but, like, keep doing what you're doing, folks.
Yeah, if there's anything you should learn from this, is to, if you see something going down that you don't like, please call and influence them.
If there's anything you should learn from this episode, it's that Russians held fake protests to sway votes.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that's also
it. It works. So you should do it, too, because it clearly works.
What's your Good Muslim Award?
My Good Muslim Award just goes out to all the surviving families out there.
Yeah.
Just, I'm thinking about March 5th when the DACA paperwork expires for so many people. I'm thinking about Nabra Hassanan's family. I'm thinking about Trayvon Martin's birthday that also went by this Black History Month, and just all of the surviving families in Florida, the number of school shootings that we've had. Just, I feel like every day people are just surviving.
Surviving.
And so I'm sending my love.
And that's it for our show. Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. Sara, what you got going on this month?
I'm going to be at the University of Columbia for their Muslim Protagonist event.
Awesome.
I'll be performing there as well, and I'll be there with our friends from the Identity Politics podcast, Ikhlas Salim and Mecca Ali.
I love them.
And we're going to miss you, Taz.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Boston at Northeastern University. I think it should be open. If you're in Boston, I'll be speaking there on February 25th.
And we'll both be in Florida.
Yes, we'll be in Tampa.
For AWP.
AWP.
AWP, which is the Association of Writers and Writing Programs.
We're both going to be there in Tampa the first week of March. I think you need to buy tickets for that one, though, if you do show up. But hopefully we'll get to check out all of our writer friends while we're there.
Yeah, good catch. Get tickets. And also, we need an intern or assistant.
Oh, my gosh. We need help. We need help.
If you are that person, hit us up. Don't hit us up with emojis and winky faces.
Yeah. And also, don't hit us up on Facebook. We have a website, goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. Go to the contact page if you want to be our intern, if you just want to say good things, or if you want us to answer any questions you have, whatever. Whatever you want for us, check out our website, go to our contact page. We'll sometimes respond.
And if you're a potential assistant, then reach out to us the same way that we'll see you will reach out to people that we're trying to reach on our behalf. And all the cool things you're doing, like, basically just, yeah, don't do it with emojis.
Yeah, don't do it with emoji.
That's a thing that happens. And I'm going to go see Black Panther, Tez. I'm out.
Oh, I'm going to go to a wedding.
Ooh.
It's going to be good. But I will see Black Panther soon. And I can't wait. And I will see you in Tampa, Zara.
See you in Tampa.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy Potluck. Potluck. Fathers and daughters should snowboard together. Fathers and daughters should snowboard together. Fathers and daughters should snowboard together.